Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Now, we're expecting President Donald Trump and Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos to hold a press conference in a couple of minutes. It's scheduled for 3:45 this afternoon. The two met at the White House today for the first time. And when that press conference begins, we will bring it to you live. So we're just in a holding pattern until then. But while we wait, we want to take a closer look at the first big step the Trump administration is taking to shrink the role of the federal government in education. Budget documents obtained by The Washington Post show that the administration plans to cut more than $10.5 billion from the education budget. In return, the administration wants to put nearly $1.5 billion to expand charter schools and vouchers. For more, we're joined by Washington Post reporter Emma Brown. Emma, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
And Emma, just let me apologize in advance if I have to cut you off when the president begins his press conference, okay?
No problem.
But first and foremost, tell us about the Trump administration's budget proposal for federal education. $10.5 billion in cuts. Where do they propose making those cuts?
A lot of the cuts come in K-12 and others in higher ed. So some of the big ones in K-12 are about $1 billion gone from a program that pays for after-school programs in communities. There's about 1.5 million kids, many of them poor, who take part in those programs. And then there's about $2 billion that pays for teacher training and also for additional teachers to help defray class sizes. And that would go away under his proposal. And another $400 million that's sort of that schools could use for any number of things, everything from mental health to advanced placement courses, that would go away under this budget.
So this has the potential to affect millions of students and families across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of this money goes to, you know, basically every state in the country. And so, you know, schools will feel some of these cuts if they go through. Now, whether they go through is another question, given that I think Congress is hearing already from groups that are talking about the impacts of these potential cuts.
Hmm. Now, in Massachusetts, according to the Massachusetts Department of Education, federal funding accounts for about 5% of elementary and secondary school funding. But in other states, it could be higher, possibly even up to 10% in certain states?
Right. That is true.
Okay. All right.
And yeah, so states that are, you know, where funding is already a problem, federal funding cuts, they could feel that.
Okay, so now tell us about the other side of this budget proposal from the administration, the $1.5 billion to expand charter schools and vouchers and for grants to encourage so-called school choice policies in public schools. Give us some more details on that proposal.
Yeah, this is the big priority for the administration. And so there would be $250 million in a new fund basically to expand vouchers. And we don't know exactly what that would look like, but this is coming out of a research program that the department funds. So the proposal is to use the money to expand vouchers and then to study their impacts.
Mm.
Then there'd be about another $160 million to expand charter schools. And then the biggie is $1 billion for school districts who agree to adopt some choice-friendly policies, basically adopt a different kind of funding formula for their students, allow kids to choose which school they enroll, so not necessarily have to go to the school in their neighborhood, and then let the money, the federal money and state and local money, follow that kid wherever they decide to go.
Oh, interesting. So, I mean, is the Trump administration sort of taking a page out of the Obama playbook here? Because the Obama administration offered all that race to the top money for states that did, you know, for example, things like adopt the Common Core.
Right. So this is a different, the Trump administration has a different preferred policy. But
exactly.
In a way, this is similar because they're saying, if you do what we like, we'll give you some more money. And, you know, the Obama administration was roundly criticized for sort of coercing states into doing what they wanted them to do with money. And so in that way, I think the Trump administration will probably hear some of the same criticisms.
Yeah. Now, during the campaign, then-candidate Donald Trump promised a $20 billion voucher program for use at public and private schools. All the programs that you just went over amount to $1.5 billion in this proposed federal education budget. So, I mean, in a way, are proponents of school choice, perhaps even, you know, his Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, disappointed that there isn't more money coming forthcoming?
I don't think they're disappointed, because I think the administration has made clear that this is a first step towards ramping up toward that $20 billion. And they just, I mean, there hasn't been a president and an education secretary that has been so out there promoting particularly private school choice. You know, there's more of a bipartisan agreement on charter schools, but vouchers are really polarizing. And so to have a president and an education secretary who are so firmly behind them and speaking about them so frequently in a very public way is a really welcome thing for proponents of that avenue.
Yeah. Education is such a battleground when it comes to sort of underlying philosophies of how involved the government should be, this federal government especially. I mean, are we seeing sort of evidence of what the Trump administration's priorities are with this proposed federal education budget?
Absolutely. They feel very strongly that the federal government has too large a role in education, and that the Education Department has taken on all kinds of responsibilities and jobs that it really has no place doing. So, the cuts to some of these programs, they're very frank in saying in these budget documents that this is because we just don't think the federal government should be doing this.
And so, I mean, but the Trump administration, on the other hand, is saying that it wants to fund national security more. I mean, are they in effect saying that less money for education, more money for defense?
Yeah, there are certain line items that get cut in this budget where the explanation is, hey, we've got to have more money for the president's priority, which is national security and defense. So, for example, career and technical education is something that the Trump administration has been very vocally in support of, and yet that, grants to states for career and technical education would take a cut under this, and the reason given is national security.
Huh. Wow. So this, of course, is the Trump administration's proposed federal education budget. You mentioned a little earlier that they're already hearing pushback from education groups. What's the likelihood of it going anywhere as it progresses through the process? Is Congress likely to like this budget?
It's really hard to imagine that this budget will be enacted by Congress in any way that... I just don't think that Congress has the stomach to make some of these cuts. We didn't talk about some of the higher ed changes, which already are getting huge backlash, like ending public service loan forgiveness, which allows folks who take low-paying jobs in public service to get the balance of their loan forgiven after 10 years. I mean, there's just huge constituencies for all of these things, and they are already speaking out. Congress has already shown when they reached their bipartisan budget deal earlier this month, they did not make the large cuts that Trump had sought, even for the, that's just for the next few months. But I think we've seen that there's just not the stomach for these huge cuts.
Mm. Well, Emma Brown is an education reporter for The Washington Post, walking us through the details of the Trump administration's first proposed federal education budget. Emma, thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me.
Well, as I mentioned a little earlier, President Donald Trump is expected to be giving a press conference with the Colombian president any minute now, and we are waiting for that to start. And if it does start during this show, we'll bring it to you live. But as we wait, let's go to a different story here. Earlier today, a new addiction treatment center did open in Boston, bringing the number of treatment beds in the city back to where it was 2.5 years ago. That's when the city suddenly closed the bridge to Long Island, shuttering several social service programs. As WBUR's Deborah Becker reports, the state and city provided $2 million in grants and loans to help open this new center, helping close the gap in treatment beds available for women.
This is often people's home for the first time in a long, long time.
Jonathan Scott is president and CEO of Victory Programs. He's proudly showing a beautifully restored 6,000-square-foot house in Roxbury that today becomes Victory's newest addiction treatment program for women, called New Jolynn's Home.
The house is beautiful.
Isn't it great? Isn't it great?
Victory Programs, which runs 18 treatment facilities, most of them for women, purchased this single-family home for more than $850,000 and used $2 million in state and city assistance to renovate it.
The city of Boston and the Commonwealth teamed up and really helped with very important loans and grants. The state recognized the importance of women's services, what everybody's going through in the opioid epidemic.
New Jolynn's home is licensed as a recovery home. That's a place where people go, usually after a month of rehab, to learn how to live independently. A typical stay is 4 to 6 months. Some can stay as long as a year. Its name is from the original treatment program on Long Island, Jolynn's Family Home. It was named after Scott's mother, who helped raise money for the original program. Scott says it's been a struggle since Boston officials closed all the social service programs on Long Island in October of 2014 when they shut down the bridge to the island because it was not safe. Victory lost 47 treatment beds. But with these 24 beds now at New Jolynn's home, they'll have the same capacity they had when the bridge closed.
This opening really makes us whole again. This building is certainly this kind of jewel in the crown. I tell people it often takes 5 years to open a single recovery home, so that our team could do it in 2.5 years is pretty outstanding. Yeah.
37-year-old Kelly Raposa vividly remembers the bridge closing. She had been in a Victory program on Long Island for about 5 months and had a new job in Boston. Raposa was waiting for a ride back to the program after work.
I was waiting for the van to go back onto the island, and then I got a phone call from my roommate and my senior counselor saying, you know, they're closing the bridge. What do you need? We'll grab stuff from your room.
Raposa says it was chaotic. Hundreds of people who had just a few hours to leave the island's treatment programs and homeless shelters were standing in parking lots with their belongings in garbage bags, not knowing where they were going next.
It's kind of surreal now. It was crazy. I didn't know what to do.
Raposa was placed in a hotel room with some other women for the night, and she was back in a program by the next day. Like some 70% of the women in treatment at Victory programs, Raposa is a mother. After several months in treatment and then help with housing, she now has custody of her 5-year-old son, a job, and a car. Raposa says although more beds are now available, even more are needed.
I'm happy for Victory programs. I'm happy for the women that get to have a bed here, because it is so hard as a woman to find a bed. Waiting lists, you know, people are fighting, people are dying to get into places like this.
It's still not clear what might happen on Long Island, a 214-acre island in the middle of Boston Harbor with several shuttered buildings. Camp Harborview, a summer camp for inner-city children, still operates on the island using ferries to transport the campers. Boston officials estimate it would cost about $80 million to replace the bridge. And city officials say a cost-benefit analysis is still being done and no decisions have been made about the future of Long Island.
That story from WBUR's Deborah Becker. Radio Boston is produced by Kathleen McNerney, Jamie Bologna, and Allison Bruzek. We had help from Sean Bowden and Caitlin O'Keefe. Tim Skoog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. And just a reminder here, President Donald Trump is expected to give a press conference with the Colombian president. All things considered, we'll have more. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.